Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm enjoying all the Spotify for heat pumps comparison, that's what they get called, which I think feel like the press eats that stuff up, so yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, the press, and to be fair, I suppose depending on which round you're in, investors love the X of Y,
exactly,
X as a service type, exactly, thing, because it's just like you don't need to explain it, right? It's just basically like, yeah, oh, get that.
This is Wicked Problems. I'm Richard Delavan.
I think it was COP 2 years ago, so end of 2022, all the VCs came back and had got really excited about adaptation tech. And I think it's such a necessary thing. And it immediately feels like it sits outside of their typical ballpark, which is the technologies that I tend to find interesting. Another VC said to me they thought that we're not seeing many deals because up until recently it was seen as a really kind of gloomy thing to invest in, as if you're just yourself to this situation. I feel like that's turned recently though, because we are now, we know the world we're living in. But I think there's some psychology behind it, which is interesting.
Freya Pratty is the climate tech reporter for the Financial Times-backed Sifted.eu. She's one of the most prolific reporters covering climate tech in Europe. We'd hoped to get her for ages to come on to the show, but despite 30 years of working in or with media, I've never quite gotten the knack of pre-recording a breaking news scoop, which is what we happened to get when we were talking. So when Freya and I spoke on Friday and she spilled about Bill Gates backing UK direct air capture company Mission Zero, I didn't go to all the trouble of getting her to pretend we were speaking today, Monday. So apologies for any confusion. As the quote widely misattributed to W.C. Fields, Groucho Marx, and George Burns goes, if you can fake authenticity, you've got it made. So, still some work to do there in this parish. Freya and I talk about a lot of the topics she's reporting on, white hydrogen, whether adaptation tech is investable beyond buzzy Series A candidates like London's Climate X, and of course, that DAC investment news today. Quick bit of housekeeping. If you're enjoying Wicked Problems Climate Tech Conversations, do leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you're receiving these podcasts. And if you'd like to support our work and get an ad-free version, plus access to lots more great content, why not sign up at wickedproblems.earth? We appreciate your generosity. But now, here's what I hope will be the first of many conversations with Freya Pratty of Sifted.eu. Freya Pratty of the FT-backed Sifted, their climate tech reporter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What have you been up to?
Yeah, this week I have actually had a rare thing in journalism where I've had a week to work on longer projects. So I haven't been following as much news. I kind of asked if I could have a week to work on some things I've been trying to get over the line for a while. So I've been writing about white hydrogen, which is something I've heard about for a while but not written about. What else have I been writing on? I've been trying to track all of Octopus Energy's acquisitions. They've done loads. That's interesting, mapping that out. And then towards the end of the week, there has been some more newsy stuff that I've written about in climate, which I think we can talk about. Yeah, quite a nice week.
It's never a dull week in this space. But like, so why hydrogen? First of all, just to explain to the listener, if who doesn't understand every single color of the rainbow of hydrogen, what is white hydrogen?
So this is naturally occurring deposits of it under the Earth's crust. Right. It's a bit of a holy grail. If we find it, it's amazing. But a lot of people think it's not there in the first place because it's such a small molecule. It could have just kind of disappeared into the atmosphere. Right. And even if it is there, tapping into it and using that gas is a whole other thing. So it's one of those, I feel like there's many of those in climate tech. It's an amazing thing if it happens, and it could not happen at all. But interesting, a lot of startups are getting into it, which is interesting in that it's a huge capex thing, right? To drill into the Earth's crust. Someone told me this week it costs $10 million to drill a hole into the Earth. So for startups getting into this game, because the oil and gas companies are also looking.
And I think, I mean, that's one of the reasons actually that I've been desperate to have you on the show, because I think you're right there at the junction between understanding the capital requirements of startups in the space and also that startups are finding that the heritage or legacy companies in exploration for energy, like the capex requirements are crazy.
Yeah.
So many more zeros than two kids with a PowerPoint and a dream, as per previous kind of tech waves. And careful listeners will know, full disclosure, I used to have Baker Hughes, the oilfield services company, as a client. But yeah, no, it's an interesting space.
Yeah, I think someone I talked to this week, I mean, they're in the startup world in relation to hydrogen, so they have a particular angle on it. But their argument was this tech appears similar to oil and gas exploration, but it's actually very different. So his argument was that those companies would have the capex to do these kind of things, but perhaps would have to move all this legacy tech over into hydrogen. And that might actually be a harder shift than starting from scratch. So he was quite bullish on startups' place in this. But yeah, it's interesting. There might not even be deposits there to be found. So it's all a bit of a question, but it's an interesting one.
Absolutely. The last couple of weeks, you did actually quite a major piece, or co-authored quite a major piece, on why hasn't VC moved to better support adaptation? So we talk about climate tech, we talk about climate solutions being in two very broad categories, one being mitigation, essentially, let's stop putting stuff into the air. The other being adaptation, technologies that allow people to better adapt to a world that we have now created. The way I try to frame this is like, what's the IRR, the internal rate of return of a seawall, because of why it's difficult to make it investable. So like, what did you explore? There's a company I think you focused on in particular, which I went to visit after I saw you write about it. Tell me about like, what made you decide to write that piece and what conclusions did you come to?
Yeah, this is something I've been interested in for a while. I think it was COP 2 years ago, so to end of 2022, all the VCs came back and had got really excited about adaptation tech. And I think it's such a necessary thing. And it immediately feels like it sits outside of their typical ballpark, which is the technologies that I tend to find interesting. There's ones that VCs need to get us to adjust to get comfortable to. So I've been interested in it for a while, but I never saw any deals. And then the impetus for this particular article was me and another reporter who's based in Germany for Sifted. We found out that ClimateX, which is a London startup, the one you're referring to, is in the process of raising a Series A round. Can't share any more than that. That was all we printed, but that's what we found out. And they are a software company that sits within adaptation because they're working on data for financial services and investors to assess the climate impact on their businesses.
And on the back of your reporting, so Freya, there you go, tag taping. I saw on LinkedIn that from one of the founders that they were doing an event last week at their headquarters. So as I understand it, people from a consulting and or financial services background have gotten into this space in order to be able to, in their first kind of customer set, look at the financial services sector about better pricing of risk when it comes to climate. And of course, their event was the same day the SEC voted on their rules for kind of requiring US publicly traded companies to report on scope 1 and scope 2 emissions and climate risk. going forward. So it was kind of a, yeah, good day for them to be doing that.
So, yeah, and from what we hear from VCs, they're quite a buzzy deal. So they had Pale Blue Dot, the Swedish fund, invested in the last round, or from the seed round, I think they've been involved. So yeah, they're an interesting company. And we thought, okay, this falls within adaptation tech, but it's a very specific slice of the industry. It's adaptation for companies and largely for, I guess, the Western world, which is not the part of the world that's at the forefront of needing to adapt. I think we all need to adapt, but in terms of first movers and most severely affected. So we got interested in that and we wrote this article looking at Climate X and the parts of the adaptation industry that are VC backable. And it kind of fell down to the same thing that the broader climate tech question comes down to, which is that the infrastructure is the VC case around that is really hard, same as it is for mitigation technologies. We had a few, I mean, same thing as I was saying about COP a few years ago, VCs want to say they're interested and I think are probably genuinely looking for ways to back this technology. But it's hard. A lot of it involves public sector. If it's big infrastructure projects in a city, it would involve public sector involvement that VCs are not comfortable with. So yeah, it's something I find a really interesting part of the market at the moment.
Interesting. I mean, were there any other subsectors that, like, within your reporting that came across as being investable? It's something like, again, like we had a chap who used to work for Bive Ventures on the show previously about talking about adaptation tech. And my question to him was, is it investable from a venture perspective because of all those issues? And he was, of course, yes, definitely. And in fact, he's actually putting together a conference at the end of next month in Munich. Where are there areas where investors can see this kind of even foreseeable time horizon return on some of these technologies?
Yeah, I think it's really hard. I guess other stuff that might fall within it, there are other software plays people are working on, so things like early warning systems for forest fires or floods. Right. I guess perhaps like satellites involved in that.
And for utilities, that's really big, isn't it? For fire, wildfire, either prevention or kind of early warning sign, like you say.
But that's, again, software and the market, perhaps not these communities that are at the forefront of having to adapt quickly. I mean, I would class something like vertical farming as an adaptation technology, but then maybe the case on that being venture backable has kind of gone away in the last few years. But stuff like next generation crops, or there's things to do with AI tools to research different crops. That's, but again, going back into the software part. Right. I guess the like hardcore adaptation tech, like flood defenses and defending cities and like built environment tech, I've not seen deals in that area. But it also goes perhaps to the point that VCs have geographical mandates and stepping outside of that is hard, which I think in climate tech in general is an issue because this is obviously a global problem. But I spoke to, so Lena from Planet A Ventures has done quite a lot of work on adaptation. I think they're a really interesting VC fund. And she was saying the reason it's not backable is the segments of the market that you'd need to target are just not ones that tech companies have gone to before. And it's a whole new thing. Right. And also this idea that adaptation is such a localized problem. You need to be able to be both helping a very specific community adapt to their circumstance, but also if a VC comes in, it needs to be something that can scale across countries really fast. So it's like inherently in tension with the VC mindset, I guess. Someone else, another VC said to me, they thought that perhaps it's just because that we're not seeing many deals because up until recently, it was seen as a really kind of gloomy thing to invest in, as if you're just putting yourself to this situation. I feel like that's turned recently, though, because we are now, we know that this is the world we're living in. But I think there's some psychology behind it, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, I suppose that's one of the reasons I think this year will be interesting to see whether or not others kind of dabble in more than they have been willing to do before because of the news flow, because of the fact that we've had Copernicus coming out and saying, right, we've had 12 consecutive months of above 1.5. And even though that technically isn't the exceeding the 1.5 threshold as defined by Paris, the Paris Agreement in 2015, like it bad. I mean, there's nobody I talk to who's like, nobody's not saying that. And I'm thinking that we're going to be hearing more about that. In fact, I saw it was yesterday.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Fiona Harvey had something in The Guardian on the head of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the States calling for rules on exploring technologies around geoengineering, otherwise known as solar radiation management. Yeah. And the idea, basically for the first time, I think The Guardian has actually led with this as being a, like, baked into her piece was the, like, yeah, we're definitely going to need to do this, which is, that was new. I don't think it a year ago you would have seen that.
In the last few months, I've noticed a real turn on, I saw UCL, is it, hiring a lead on, is it UCL, exploring the boundaries for geoengineering research, not exploring it itself, but exploring the frameworks in which we would research it, which I guess is a move in a direction. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there have, I mean, there definitely have been protests against doing any of the kind of like bench scale type experimentation, but ones that got any kind of public money, like I think in Sweden, I want to say, like year before last, of having, like, people just went absolutely spare about the idea of some institution in Sweden getting government funding to do, defining a research program to do things that are, I think some private companies are doing, which is to put some balloons up in the atmosphere with sulfur dioxide, have them pop and see what happens, which is, yeah. And that kind of attracted so much protest that the government there was like, nope, we're done.
Yeah, that the article, was it last summer in the MIT Tech Review?
Makes
sense. That I feel like that was everywhere, that article, for a while. And I guess that seemed like a quite informal setup the company had gone for. So I guess examples like this perhaps don't lead the industry in the right direction.
No, well, I mean, I think it remains to be seen. I do think that, like, it's probably not venture. It's more like super angel type people who are, by super angel, I mean, I wrote a piece last summer about, like, one potential funder of that being Mohammed bin Salman, of being like, if you had to pick anybody who had the state capacity and the money and the potential of just like, hey, let's just try that. But like,
I mean,
an actor who had all the money, all the reason, and perhaps fewer of the restraints to be able to say, yeah, let's go and see if that works. We will see.
I wrote about, have you looked at Real Ice? They're a Welsh company. They're really interesting. They are trying to refreeze the Arctic. It's really interesting. They send drones out under the ice, which then like fire through the ice and bring, cause I didn't realize that the ice has a layer on it which insulates it that stops more ice forming. So if they like shoot water across the top of the ice, it lowers the temperature of the whole thing and it starts to grow more. Which I guess is I think under the definition of geoengineering in some way, it's probably less controversial. But on the financing model, I think they're in the early days, they're okay for now. But the idea, they said to me they were hoping for a similar fund to be set up like the Amazon fund, but for the Arctic, which may happen, but it's a similar kind of idea of all these big pockets of philanthropy. Money open up. I don't know.
What's a good framing, I suppose, right? Like, cause who's going to be against reforestation of the Amazon, right? Or of conservation in the Amazon. So if you frame it in that, then like, you're going to be far more like, yeah, sure. Here's some money to keep the ice.
Yeah.
That seems very clever. And gosh, well, there you go. I think that's probably something that we're going to be hearing a lot more about this year, which actually leads us to another topic. Very exciting. Which is direct air capture, which some people, of course, do class as a flavor of geoengineering or solar radiation management. And the idea of like having big, huge vacuums that will suck carbon directly out of the atmosphere, as per Deus Ex Machina, of like in the Apple TV program Expositions, or It's not quite right. It's extrapolations. That was it. Was this? And that being like the magic technology that will allow us to be able to get out of jail for free, or at least, or not for free, but for like quite a lot of money, but still however we'll be able to save ourselves. And like that's had been a space where so much money has gotten into in the last few years.
Yeah. So I felt like the last 6 months I was hearing less about direct air capture fundraisers, but I've been writing one today and I was writing one last week. So yeah, it's kind of hotting up again. The thing that I think is interesting about the new, so 2 years ago, it was Climeworks, the Swiss company that's raised, I think its last round was $650 million. So it's huge rounds. Mm. Now you've got these kind of smaller, earlier stage companies raising much smaller rounds, but they're able to get their tech off the ground far quicker. So this company, Greenlight, that I was writing about last week, is 2 years old and it's about to go to production. Or when it gets to production, it'll be about 2 years old. Climeworks was 12 years old when it got to that point.
Wow.
The company I was writing about today is similarly like considerably younger. So this, the like launch to technology, the DAC kind of timeline is really crunched down, which is interesting. But the question now is they're all trying to iterate on making the tech cheaper to get the price of carbon removal down, which is kind of the central question.
And so we're going to be, this is not going to be coming out before Monday at 9 a.m. UK time. So what's the company you're writing about today?
Yeah, so this is Mission Zero. They're a British direct air capture company. They are interesting in that they don't want to do what Climeworks does, which is build plants and run them themselves and sell credits. Mm. They are building plants to then sell to commercial customers. So they're a B2DAC company rather than a B2C. Yeah, which then we were talking about the size of the round they've raised. It's 22 million pounds.
Right.
And they were sort of making the argument that because they're going to sell to businesses, the rate of return will be quicker than a credit model. So they perhaps don't need to raise these huge rounds like Climeworks has. Yeah, they've got a few projects. They've got one in Sheffield working on aviation fuel. And they're working on something about building materials as well.
Right.
So they're very much more sort of commercial partnership minded than some of the others. And their whole thing is we just want to get machines to partners as quickly as possible. So they're buying off-the-shelf components. It's all modular.
Right.
And they just kind of want to deploy really quickly. So they're doing some iteration on the tech, but it's kind of about plugging other components that already exist together, which I was quite convinced by as an approach. Mm. They also had this interesting project. They won the X Prize, which is the Musk Foundation's prize, for a project in Oman, which I was really interested in. It was with another company. It was combining direct air capture with another form of removal in the mountains in Oman. They've then stopped the partnership because they said they wanted to pursue more commercial partnerships. Which is interesting in that I thought that they do seem much more kind of business model minded than some of the other credit funded companies. Yeah, they're an interesting one. They also had Breakthrough Energy, so Bill Gates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, that's no car to dummies for sure. That's super interesting. And I think that is one of the things where having had conversations in the past with big funds of nonprofits who are looking to actually fund the patient capital, mythical kind of beast in climate tech, very necessary. But then I suppose if you're, and again, I'm not saying this is happening for Mission Zero, but it sounds like maybe it's not a million miles away. The idea that you're courting patient capital, but then you find a model and you're going to pivot super hard to figure out how you can actually get capital that isn't quite as patient in order to be able to get more of it quicker to scale.
Yeah. They were making some interesting points, the team, about how the model for DAC at the moment is build huge plants to show that scalability brings down the cost. Mm. And they were saying we're really anti this idea. We should build quick, small versions that can then scale with the market. So kind of inversing the whole thing around. Right. Yeah, I guess that entire industry is a kind of wait and see. It's very expensive, et cetera.
No, but I hadn't thought about this before you just said this, right? It's the bet is that you're not going to get the kind of Wright's Law technology curve cost reductions due to scale at kind of giga government Apollo mission type level, but doing it again and again and again and again at a smaller modular level, you can get these kind of efficiencies. And that's more like the Ford approach than the Apollo mission kind of approach.
Yeah. And they were making the case that there are industries that really need carbon, everything from, I guess, like synthetic aviation fuel. I find that really hard to say always. I don't know why. And even like the carbonated drinks industry, there are industries that are reliant on carbon and it's everywhere, but they can't get it. So I think their argument is there's a market demand scale off the back of that, which, yeah, probably makes some sense.
Yeah, no, off-takers for the stuff we've pulling out of the air is always a trickier conversation to have. So what else is on your radar?
What else is on my radar? I'm really interested at the moment. I'm trying to work on a piece about the Vargas Group, who are behind. They're the Swedish firm behind Northvolt and Polarium and H2 Green Steel and Aera, the new heat pump company. Kind of this mythological, seem to always get it right and produce a unicorn company. So I'm working on something about them at the moment.
Okay.
And just the secret sauce behind getting it right three, potentially four times, I think is really interesting.
I suppose it's like, I don't know, some sort of Nordic crime drama thing going to be happening in the background with that. It's almost too good to be true.
I think that, I was talking to another investor who was speculating on how they've done well, and he was saying, well, they just look at where the tailwinds are regulatory wise and just say, okay, we're making a business right there. But they also feed off each other. So apparently the story is that the idea for H2 Green Steel, which I guess as it says on the tin is making green steel, that came from a Northvolt board meeting where they were saying, okay, car makers need EV batteries, but they also need greener steel. So I think they've got this good chain going of one problem leads to another, and then the reputation of one, or like H2 Green Steel raised this enormous round, probably partly off the connection to Northvolt and the proof that the people behind these companies could do it.
Right.
So it's a bit of a little empire. I find it really fascinating. They've also just last week or earlier this, I can't remember when it was, recently, they've announced a textiles company alongside H&M. So they're quite prolific. It's interesting.
I look forward to that reporting. And I loved your reporting on Aera. And in fact, I see that others, including Ben Cook, friend of the show from The Times, followed your lead in interviewing the folks from Aera and being able to talk about their UK market entry.
I'm enjoying all the Spotify for heat pumps comparison. That's what they get called, which I think feel like the press eats that stuff up. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, the press, and to be fair, I suppose, depending on which round you're in, investors love the X of Y.
Exactly.
As an X, or an X as a service type thing, because it's just like you don't need to explain it, right? It's just basically like, get that.
Yeah.
This has been really cool. I'm so glad we can make this happen. Freya Prady, what are you up to this weekend? Anything exciting?
What am I doing this weekend? I'm going to a Cayley, a Scottish dance.
No.
Yeah.
Do you Scottish dance before?
I think I remember going to one when I was very little. So no, it's a new thing, really. I'm going to be very hard. But I guess the point is you just all follow the lead, right?
I think that is the point. I mean, of course, it is Paddy's Day this weekend. So we'll say nothing. But I suppose there are plenty of folks who are doing the Scottish dancing who perhaps go back a couple of generations and they might be doing something slightly different, but we won't get into that. But looks, that's been fantastic. Great to talk to you, Freya. And I hope we can do this again very soon.
For sure. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Wicked Problems. And if you like this conversation, please share it and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps people find the show. You can subscribe to our newsletter at news.wickedproblems.uk, where you could also find more episodes with Richard Delvin and Claire Brady and all our show notes. And consider becoming a paid subscriber to help support our work. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. For now, thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.